How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. And we have so much stuff to talk about this week. We were off last week, so believe it or not, we have not talked in depth about the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. We'll have notes on that later on in the show. In case you're one of those people whose only connection to the wrestling world is Wrestling Observer Live here, but plenty of stuff from the past week as well. Last night, arguably the greatest fighter of all time announced what may be his retirement. There are already forces working to get him back into the cage. We'll talk about that here on the program. Plus, results of last night's Strikeforce show, the beginnings of the World Heavyweight Grand Prix Tournament, which, amazingly, on the show last night, they did not mention when the next round will be taking place or where. We'll talk about that. Plus, the TNA pay-per-view, which is taking place tonight. There's already been a change to the card. Two individuals will not be on the show. We'll tell you what happened and talk a little bit about, I guess, where they may be going without them. It's kind of a, I shouldn't say it was a big part of the show, but it was certainly something that's been pushed on TV for several weeks. So we'll talk about that. Plus, the full lineup for the show and some predictions as well. We'll talk about UFC breaking their attendance and gate record, smashing their attendance and gate record, in fact, in Toronto. Lineup for that show and also some predictions for the future, some possible big matches they could be doing, some of which also stems from the UFC 126 show, which we did not have a chance to recap last week as we did not have a first-run show going head-to-head with the Super Bowl. Members of the Super Bowl, the winning team, were at the SmackDown tapings this week. We'll tell you a little bit about that and the championship belts. Seems to be some a lot of talk, actually, about where those belts actually came from, or at least the main championship belt that ended up as a wallpaper on ESPN.com. We'll talk about that, plus the WWE earnings report. Might play some clips from a recent Chris Jericho interview we did talking about his future. Talk about Tough Enough, Thiago Silva, 2-21-11. And so much more. We'll be taking your email questions as well. A packed day here on the program. We're back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. And we're opening up today with a shocking result last night, not just the fact that Bigfoot Silva beat Fedor Emelianenko in the first round of the Strikeforce World Grand Prix Tournament, which aired on Showtime, but afterwards, after the fight was stopped following the second round, Emelianenko's eye all busted up, he couldn't see out of it, the announcement by Fedor that perhaps it is high time to hang it up, arguably the greatest fighter of all time. Two losses in a row, first to Fabricio Werdum, did a triangle in a shocking finish. Didn't really say anything about the status of Fedor in the sense that he got caught, everybody gets caught. You know, there were a lot of questions about what would happen in his next fight, and the answer was a bigger, stronger guy with a good talk game, took him down, controlled him, beat him up, and Fedor was unable to continue in the third round. And Mike, your thoughts on that historic fight last night?
It was something else. I mean, you know, it's just Fedor's been through a lot of battles over the years, and a 280-pound, you know, pretty talented guy laying on top of you and just laying the hammer down to you, it's tough. And that's why, you know, even coming into this fight, there were people that were hinting and wondering and just kind of talking about the fact maybe Fedor should drop to 205, which is something that I don't think is feasible and something that he would do even if he could anyway. But it was just one of those things. You're seeing just the ending of an era. And two fights in a row now, Fedor should be questioning himself a little bit. And it was quick for his management and Scott Coker, obviously, to come out and say, you know, hey, he's just, you know, a little bit defeated right now, and we're sure we'll see him back in the cage. And they said what they were, you know, supposed to say, too. But realistically, if this is the end of Fedor's career, you know, there's going to be people now that poke holes and want to have some revisionist history as far as picking apart his legacy and obviously not going into the UFC and everything. And sometimes the winners make history, and Dana White will continue to to probably rub this in for years. He was having a field day with it a little bit last night on Twitter. But, you know, even though that said, if this is the end of this era, Fedor is, as you said, you know, arguably the greatest fighter in the history of MMA, and it just something special.
Got emails last night. One guy in particular said that he'd watched a lot of boxing, and he'd seen the look in Fedor's eyes before of a guy who just wasn't into training as hard as he needed to and bringing in the top guys, and he felt that Fedor was done. And you obviously have followed boxing for a long time, so I want to get your thoughts on that. And also on Coker and Vadim Finkelstein, basically Vadim being Fedor's manager. I mean, really, like within hours, they were just almost blowing off his decision. You know, Coker was like, guys say this and that, he'll be back, and maybe he'll even be a reserve fighter. And obviously, Vadim, it's meal ticket. But to me, it was just, I just kind of felt like, you know, if the guy wants to be done, let him be done. I mean, you know, a lot of guys say a lot of things, but Fedor's never really been one of those guys. Obviously, he hasn't really had the opportunity to be one of those guys, having been undefeated for so long. But, you know, if he's lost two in a row and he doesn't feel it anymore, then let him go. You know, that's kind of my thought there. And what are your thoughts?
Well, that's why. Well, and when it comes to him, too, him saying it and then them going out there, it makes what they say probably come off a little bit more hollow in most people's ears compared to boxing, because Fedor doesn't. He's obviously, you know, with the interview last night being another sterling example of that, and his music selection being another sterling example of that. It's just, you know, he's not, you know, Mr. Show or Mr. Entertainment. He's not going to give you lines or, you know, say something he probably doesn't believe. So he, you know, puts that out there. You know, boxers say it, and, you know, they do come back millions and millions of times. But, you know, Fedor's just the way he came across, and the fact that, you know, I don't, how much his heart is into it, and, you know, who knows. But, you know, he was still a great fighter. But at this point, too, it's not, and he can still beat a lot of guys. It's not like his career, you know, could be over if he, you know, if he didn't want to, like he couldn't go on and continue. He can still beat a lot of guys, but yeah, I guess it just depends on what, you know, he's kind of reached a pinnacle in a mountaintop when he was in Pride. I mean, he has been a big star. People know who he is. I'm not sure if he needs the money or not. He certainly doesn't act like he needs it. So if this is going to be it and this is the end of his sporting career, you know, that's okay. But, you know, from Coker's point of view, he's got to come out and say that, because Fedor still is a big name and a draw and obviously worth money, even if he were to come back again. So it's good for him to say that. And Vadim, obviously, or as Dana likes to call him, Vadummy, obviously he's going to be saying that too, because, you know, the people attached with Fedor, I'm not sure who else is in that camp, you know, that they could possibly put on a Strikeforce card and really make money off of. But, you know, they'll never be able to have a Strikeforce M1 show again, because Strikeforce without Fedor doesn't really need M1.
See, I agree. I disagree a little bit with the Coker deal, because to me, it's one thing with Chuck Liddell where it's like, you know, he takes a lot of beatings. He takes a beating. He's getting knocked out. And, you know, Dana's trying desperately to get him to retire, and Chuck is just begging to continue. Come on, please let me have another fight. And they break down, and they give him another fight with Rich Franklin. He gets knocked out again, and this time it's supposedly really over. I mean, that's one thing. But, you know, with Fedor, I mean, even undefeated, he took a lot of beatings, you know, that was kind of his gimmick of, you know, sometimes he'd take this beating and then he'd come back and win the fight. And even like with Brett Rogers, of all people, Brett Rogers laid a beating on Fedor, and Fedor came back and beat him, and then he loses to Verdum, and then he loses decisively to Silva. I mean, Silva beat him up and finished him, essentially. And, you know, when the guy wants out, you know, it feels like, you know, he came out there and he kind of made it clear that maybe this is time for me to go, and, you know, maybe I don't want to do this anymore, and, you know, I want to go out here instead of going in and taking another beating and getting another loss. And it just feels like here's Coker going, no. Oh, you're going to fight again, buddy. It just, that's the way it came off to me. And I don't know. I, you know, if a guy is done, he's done. Let him go.
But it's not Coker's job, per se, to have that kind of, I think it's one of those things where Coker can get out of it, you know, obviously saying, look, you know, emotional guy, people say things emotionally after fights that they tend to rethink and stuff like that. So obviously from his point of view, with Fedor still being worth something, maybe hopefully that's what he's thinking. And as a promoter, he should put a spin on it that way. I don't think, now if he said that about Andre Arlovsky, who has taken, you know, four straight brutal knockouts or something like that, that's okay. But, I mean, realistically, Brian, if Fedor wants to be done, and yes, he's taken some beatings, but he can still beat a lot of guys.
Well,
and
sure,
he can go out there and fight lesser guys and stuff like that and still get TV ratings. You know, so from Coker's point of view, if he came out cruelly or something like that, that would be one thing. But, you know, I don't think you could blame Coker, because he's got what he needs to do. You know, because he's got a fight he needs to promote that, you know, the second round of this tournament, where they don't even have a location for it yet. You know, I mean, he still needs to continue on and roll on. And if Fedor, if he even thinks for a second that Fedor might come back, obviously he wants to spin on that and keep things hyped up that he can come back.
I think there's a gentler way of doing it where you go, you know, I really hope that he comes back. I really hope that he changes his mind, and if he does so, then you know, maybe he can have this reserve spot. To just, like, completely, I mean, it just felt like he completely blew it off. Like, no, he's not retiring. He didn't mean it, blah, blah, blah. I think he did mean it. So I just felt that was I don't know. And furthermore, I mean, yes, he is the promoter, but Scott Coker's idea was, I'm going to do a heavyweight Grand Prix tournament. Here are the men in the tournament, and we're going to find out who the best is. And Fedor lost. So it's not his job to build him up and pump him up and talk about how he may be a reserve fight and all that. You know, you should have thought about this. Fedor could lose. Any of these guys could lose. So if Overeem loses in the next round, and you've got a tournament where, you know, you've got Haritanov and Verdum, and these are the only guys that have advanced so far, or whatever the case might be, I mean, that's the hand you've been dealt. Deal with it. That's the tournament that you're going to have to promote. You shouldn't be talking about how... He had a line about, that's what's great about a tournament. You never know what's going to happen, and Fedor may end up back in. What? That's what's great about a tournament? That's what's not great about a tournament. The tournament should be...
Brian, he worked for K1, for God's sake.
Well, that's true. Listen, we'll talk... I'll get your thoughts on this when we come back. We have to head to a break. But we'll talk more about this and the show in general in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 90 minutes. And we were talking about the Strikeforce Heavyweight Tournament. Fedor is already out of the tournament, as is Andre Arlovsky. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But, Mike, any other thoughts on Fedor being bumped?
No, just... You know, great moment. You know, it was a really good show last night, and we'll, you know, obviously get to all of it. But, you know, the moment when they had the camera on Silva, and there was a little bit of discussion after the fight when Murray Liotta waved it off. There was a little bit of delay in actually getting the word out, or people actually realizing what was going on. And you know, Silva's face when they announced that he won, I mean, that was a great moment. And obviously, Fedor's name recognition of him not being in there is, you know, from Strikeforce's point of view, obviously, that's not what they wanted. But with that said, you know, if they play their cards right, this is still a very intriguing tournament. And good on Antonio Bigfoot Silva.
Now, I want to say this. I want to get my criticism out of the way first, because I actually did really enjoy the show. And I thought that Strikeforce turned a corner on the last show in terms of production. And last show was really the show where it was like, wow, you know, they're promoting future events. They're interviewing guys for future events. You know, this is very, very good. And they did it last night, too. They talked to all of the participants. They talked to the current participants. They talked to some of the upcoming participants. And, I mean, I thought overall that last night's show was a big improvement over a lot of the recent shows. With that said, I didn't even think about this until this morning. Dave and I, of course, did a big update last night talking about the show. And it didn't hit me there either, which is kind of funny, because on Friday... My main thing was, they've got to do this, or this show is going to be, I don't want to say a failure, but they made a big mistake, and they did not announce when the next show is going to be as far as tournament matches. I mean, they announced like the next show in March, but I mean, okay, so you're doing a tournament, and you just did half of the bracket, not even half of the bracket. You did the two matches in one half of the bracket, and two matches in the other half of the bracket. So you got two more matches. Anyway, the point is, the next round, or whatever you want to call it, of the tournament, the next couple of tournament matches. How do you run this show with tournament matches and not be able to announce when or where the next show is going to be that has the other tournament matches? I mean, that to me is just like, I don't know. It was someone even on the show, I forget who it was, but they were talking about their match coming up in August. August?
Brett Rogers, though. I think he just had a little slip there.
He may have had a slip, but the point is, someone should have corrected him and said, no, the next round is in April. It is on this date. It is going to be on Showtime, and it is going to be in this building. And as we mentioned on Friday, you don't even really need to say what building it's going to be in. You just have to know that the people who are watching this on Showtime right now, go to your Google Calendar and mark down April such and such, because that's when the next round is going to be. And you need to hammer that home throughout the show. And they didn't do that. And to me, big mistake.
Well, and now the thing is, they actually did say it, and they had it on a graphic, but they didn't beat it to death. And that was the thing. They didn't say April 9th, April 9th, April 9th. Now, what's more troubling, and that's troubling, you know, obviously in itself, but the more troubling thing for me is just, I don't understand why they haven't nailed down the building yet for this. I know they were talking about the possibility of it being in Japan and some other stuff, but I just amazing. I know there's plenty of time to book a building. I'm just kind of surprised it's taking this long for them to actually find a location for this thing. And I don't know how much of it has to do with Josh Barnett, who, you know, the ability of Josh Barnett to run his mouth and to make people either like him or completely hate him is something where if he can fight in the Strikeforce and they do get a location set up, he's going to be a very valuable tool if he's able to have a good performance against Brett Rogers.
Andrei Arlovsky knocked out by Sergey Kharitonov, and no surprise, really. I mean, it's kind of what I would have predicted. As soon as they had a stand-up battle, it was like, it is a matter of time here. And in fact, it was, and I think it's four in a row now for Arlovsky, and sometimes it's time to hang it up. And we were talking about Fedor earlier and how he probably still does have stuff left in the tank. There are men that he could beat. With Arlovsky, it's just too many beatings, and I think this should be it.
Yeah, that's... I mean, he looks like a million bucks when the bell rings, and he's out there, and he's moving, and, you know, the footwork is great, and the punches are looking crisp, and they're sharp, and then he gets rocked, and it's, you know, you can't... You know, unless Arlovsky is going to go down like four tiers and be, you know, a big fish on a incredibly small show where he can be a gatekeeper there, he's got to go. And even, you know, forget it. You know, even in that case, no. He's just the way the knockouts have been and the brutality of him and the, you know, amount of time that he has laid out when he is out, it's too bad because he's been, you know, a likable guy and he's been a marketable guy and the fangs and, you know, all of that stuff when he was in UFC. Just, you know, he always came across really well. And it's just, again, the end of a little bit of an, you know, what era he had there. Just after knockouts like that, it's just, there's got to be something else for him to do because it's just not the sport for it.
Had a couple of reserve matches as well. And also, I was interested to see that the Chad Griggs-Jean Volante match, which was one of those, just slobber knocker, two big dudes swinging, no technique, just hitting each other as hard as they can, and Griggs ended up winning that battle. And what were your thoughts on that fight? And also, I was surprised to hear that, yes, it was a very, very crowd-pleasing fight. And in fact, if you're one of those fans, you just want to see some violence and bloodshed, this was the best fight of the year for you. But with that said, afterwards, Coker was like, okay, these men have both earned a spot on the main roster. No more challengers shows for them. And I kind of thought, I don't know if that's the kind of fight that wins you a spot on the main roster, because Jean Volante looks like most guys would destroy him. And Chad Griggs, I don't know about him either, but... I guess they're being thrown into the deep waters now.
Well, I mean, realistically, when it comes to Strikeforce, though, I mean, you know, who would hear or care about that comment? you know, for the most part, I don't think it really matters. People that are watching Strikeforce, I mean, if you're that big of a fan, all right, you're watching Challengers, and I don't think their announcement of being elevated to the main roster, you know, if that's, I don't think anybody really cares about that perception when it comes to Strikeforce, I don't think. But, you know, with Griggs, it makes sense because he has this slobber knocker where, you know, by the way, Mauro Ranallo calling it bowling shoe ugly. I think Jim Ross and Mauro have had niceties over the weekend over Twitter, so I believe that's why that one was dropped in. But he had a slobber knocker in his last fight. He beat Bobby Lashley, and he's got big sideburns. And, you know, he's just a big meatball going out there having, you know, throwing lumber. So it makes sense that he's up there, and he's a guy that they can kind of get behind and have some fun with, I think. And Vellante, on the other hand, I don't know. Obviously, they were hyping up his football, you know, how great he was as a football star, even though he couldn't catch on in places. I don't know if that was, you know, he's going to be their Brendan Schaub that way. And his celebrity status as far as being a bodyguard and stuff like that. So I guess he's got the story to go up there. And, yeah, you know, it was an exciting fight and everything. But, you know, again, I don't think their move up there is something that's going to be real earth-rattling.
No, I think it's going to be earth-rattling. I just think it's kind of early for Vellante, for sure. Griggs, you know, you may as well move him up because he's got two wins in a row against, and one of them was against Lashley. But
Del Rosario, and Del Rosario probably rolls right over him.
Yeah, and LeVar Johnson is not ready for, well, he got tired, but I mean, I was not impressed one bit with his ground game last night, but, you know, so that was the Strikeforce show, everybody, and as far
right,
as...
By the way, I just remember more, they kept hitting to Vellante also being better at 205, so I wonder what weight he fights at, I guess, if they try to ask him to move down, or if they, you know, push him to move down.
Yeah, let's very quickly, before we get into the, we're going to run over there's the TNA show this afternoon as well, so we'll talk about that. But first off, the Strikeforce Heavyweight Tournament, I guess we can look at where they are at this point and do some predictions. So it looks like for the Grand Prix, let's see if I can find the brackets here somewhere. Actually, don't think I have the brackets here. We'll talk about this later on. I'll look at it while we talk about Impact or the TNA show. Let's talk about Against All Odds. It is this afternoon. There is news coming out of the show, that being that both members of Generation Me do not appear to be on the show this afternoon. They are in a three-way with Robbie E to get a shot at the title. And they're not there. Travel issues. They couldn't make it out of, I believe, Denver. So I don't know what they're going to do for that particular match right there, but I guess they tried to fly them out last night. It didn't work, and they tried to fly them out again today, and I guess that didn't work either. So there you go. Before we get into that, I did find the brackets here. So we've got Antonio Silva facing the winner of Verdum Overeem, and we've got Haritanov facing the winner of Barnett and Rogers. So if you had to make some quick picks there, Mike, what would you predict?
I'm taking Josh Barnett over Brett Rogers. I don't know why I'm doing this with Brett Rogers' hands, but I just, you know, I think for the promotion's sake, and I think, you know, Barnett will be able to get him down and end up, you know, out-wrestling him and tiring him out. So I'll go with Barnett there, although I don't like his chances against Haritanov. I really like Haritanov in this whole thing, actually, now, too. Maybe it's just my ex-pride love for him, but... I think in Overeem Verdum, I'll take Overeem and then have Overeem go over Silva.
Overeem over Verdum?
Yes.
Interesting.
Knockout, I just, you know, I will go with the Alistair. It's not like I'm really on the Overeem bandwagon, but I'll jump on there and say via knockout.
I just think he has yet to be tested, and I don't know if necessarily Verdum is really the guy to test him, but I guess we'll see where he actually stands in mixed martial arts in 2011. If he goes to the finals and wins the entire thing, where would that put him? If you know, you look at this past year and the Dream title and the K-1 title, and he would win this Grand Prix, already the Strikeforce champion. I mean, that's some credentials.
Yeah, and it just, you know, and the long history, you know, he we all have people that are coming along as fans now who will, you know, look back in history and see it right, and you look at Overeem's whole career and you go, is he a Hall of Fame fighter? Actually, when you could actually be able to start arguing that.
We'll be back in just a moment with TNA Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to get into today. We're going to jump into the TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view preview here. And for those of you that are subscribers to the website, later on tonight, a brand new radio show with myself and Dave Meltzer running down all of the results from this show. All of the news will preview next week as well. Dave and I did a show last night, an hour talking Strikeforce, UFC, number of other topics, and another show on Friday talking TNA, WWE, the WWE earnings report. If you love this show and you only get to hear it once per week on the radio, WrestlingObserver.com is the place for you. We have a subscription area. It's $10.99 per month. And for that price, we do 15 to 20 audio shows per week. If you've got a long commute, if you like to listen to your wrestling MMA audio at the gym, whatever the case might be, there's plenty of new first-run content. We do shows nearly every single day. In fact, I think pretty much every single day at this point. And we've also got our full archive of every show we have ever recorded dating back to 2005 is available on the website. There are thousands and thousands of hours of audio on the website right now. If you sign up, you get access to all of it. You don't just get all the new stuff, you get all the past stuff as well. So basically, if you signed up today for $10.99, basically be like you signed up 5 years ago, because you can go back and listen to all of the interviews. Later on in the show, we'll play some clips of an interview we did with Chris Jericho a couple of days ago. Very interesting interview, and it's just a hint of what you get if you sign up for more. So the Against All Odds show today, Mike, is there are these occasional TNA pay-per-views that on paper look very good. The pay-per-views are usually pretty different from the television show where you get short matches and that sort of thing. But this one on paper is not necessarily looking really all that great. Let's look at the lineup here. The main event is Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy in a ladder match for the championship. And the plan had been for Jeff Hardy to regain the title. But this was before his last court case was continued again. Everybody on all sides expected the case to be wrapped up because everybody on all sides had agreed to terms of whatever the settlement was going to be. But then they showed up and apparently somebody got cold feet, and so it was continued again. So whether they put the title back on Jeff here, I don't know. He's got another court date coming up. What are your thoughts? Would you put the belt back on him? I mean, they took it off of him because he was going to plead guilty to these charges, and he didn't. So would you put it back on him in preparation for his next plea?
Yes.
Really?
The fact that he is there at this point, you might as well use it, to be honest. I mean, we've talked about, I would not have signed him in the first place, and if I did, there were other things that I would have done this whole time. That's just me. With that said, you might as well put the title back on him. I think when he is playing, I thought he was doing a very good job in that role of being just a complete, you know, D-bag as the TNA champion and being the Enigma and all that sort of stuff and holding the title. I thought he was most effective that way. You know, I use it. Because then you get to whenever it's going to be March 19th, I'm not sure when the date is where this is supposed to take place again. But then, you know, do something out of it, you know, pleading guilty, then have him drop it and, you know, he's been down on his luck or something like that. I don't know. Just use it, put it back on him, use it and get it out of the way, because I don't think they've done any favors for themselves as far as Anderson being champion. And I think Hardy would be far more effective and make more sense in their scenario. I'd rather see Hardy defending, you know, against the TNA camp and the Immortal camp or what's the other camp, Fortune. I'd rather see him with the belt than Anderson right now.
The problem with TNA, I heard about a million of them, but one of them, is just the inability to follow up anything. And to me, when Mr. Anderson won the belt at, I think it was the last pay-per-view, Genesis, when he won the belt from Hardy, show went off the air and it really seemed like he was hot. He was like a really hot babyface for TNA. And I'm not the biggest Mr. Anderson fan in the world, but I thought, you know, run with it. You know, try and do something with this guy. And the last month of TV, I mean, he's just shown absolutely nothing. They have done nothing with him. And this ladder match here, Jeff Hardy obviously has been in some great ladder matches during his career, but this is the TNA Jeff Hardy. It's not the WWE Jeff Hardy. There's a different level of effort that goes into his matches in TNA as opposed to WWE. And quite frankly, Mr. Anderson in a ladder match scares me. So I don't have high hopes for this match. Maybe it's going to be all right. Crowd heat will hopefully be pretty good. But I don't know about this one in the ring.
Yeah, I think it'll be all right. Anderson should have been more on an island. Not to say he should have been, you know, stone cold or anything like that, but more along the lines of someone that everyone in the company was gunning for. With his mouth, whether you like him or not, he can at least run his mouth, and they should have positioned him better that way, I thought. But I think the match will end up being okay, just, you know, purely because of Jeff Hardy alone, so I don't have a problem with the match.
We've got an astounding battle here. Beer Money and Scott Steiner versus Gunnar Murphy and Rob Terry. Swear to God, that's on pay-per-view today, everybody. And Rob Terry and Scott Steiner, I'm sure, are going to do some spots together, hopefully limited. We're going to have to see how good Robert Roode and James Storm are.
Hey, maybe Nathan Jones could make a run in.
Hey, may as well. This one sounds horrifying.
I don't know. Is this a Scott Steiner can turn on Beer Money and we get Rude Steiner? I don't know. I hope that's not the case, and I hope this doesn't lead to a any sort of Beer Money Gunner and Murphy feud either. But I don't know if this is just filler or what. But I hope it's just Scott Steiner goes out there, beats everybody up, and it's over relatively quickly.
I will be entertained with Scott Steiner destroying Gunner and Murphy. That that may be worth a fair amount of the money that I'm going to spend on this pay-per-view today. We've got Robbie E, I guess, challenging himself for the number one contendership for the X Division title. Maybe they'll just, who is the X Division champion right now?
Oh, God.
That's what Google is for. Let's find out. Is it Jay Lethal? List of X Division champions.
I'm not sure Robbie E beat.
Oh, it's Kazarian. Kazarian is the X Division champion, won it at Genesis. All right, so is Kazarian on this show?
Belts mean a lot in professional wrestling, everyone.
Yeah, Kazarian's not on this show, so maybe they'll just do Robbie E versus Kazarian and just do the championship match.
That would be fine. You know, they could do that. They could make everybody happy, maybe, and have the machine guns in there. It can't be the machine guns, obviously, because of injuries. So, you know, yeah, neither if they don't do that, and they'd want to continue to make it a three-way, have a championship match and throw Lethal in there, too.
I mean, just looking at it, the idea of Kazarian against either Max Buck, Jeremy Buck, or Robbie E, I mean, none of them sound like anything exciting to me.
Maybe Kazarian tries to take Cookie, because he's so good-looking that he tries to take her away and see if she's DTF.
RVD and Matt Hardy in a singles match.
I'm sorry, the run-in with Matt Hardy when he ran in there and they were all brawling in the ring, and I don't know. It's something about when Matt Hardy was throwing fists and him and RVD going at it. I'm not looking forward to this match.
No, I could have sworn we saw this match recently and it was really no good. Am I imagining
first
things?
First one back, wasn't it? This is when we said nobody knew anything about wrestling, or, you know, it's just like, no, we all just didn't like the match, dude.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. This is the problem with wrestling, everybody. There's so much wrestling, and so little of it matters, it is impossible to remember all of it. I mean, this is not an issue with brain damage or anything like that. I mean, I why should I care about Matt Hardy versus Rob Van Dam in TNA?
Well, not even in TNA, but just on the pay-per-view. And they don't do a very good job of driving the point home on these matches. I mean, realistically, you got Samoa Joe and Pope on here. I mean, has that been something? I mean, outside of Okada turning into Kato, I mean, some of the matches on here. I mean, D-Von and Bully Ray actually have, you know, probably some of the most fun build, and their thing stands out the most, and really that should be the throw-in match on this pay-per-view. That's exactly what that thing should be, you know, and instead that's probably going to be one of the more memorable things coming out of it.
The two matches they did a good job with were Angle and Jarrett, and D-Von and Bully, but in both cases, they messed something up at the end. Angle and Jarrett, they messed up by doing a stipulation where if Kurt Angle wins, he gets custody of Cody and Kira Angle, which is just a ridiculous stipulation. I mean, number one, you know, Jarrett is going to put these children on the line. Karen is going to allow these. I mean, Karen was distressed, but, you know, she didn't really, I mean, she didn't just say, no, this is not happening. This is ridiculous. You know, the idea that they could go to court and a judge would go, oh, well, geez, you guys both put the kids up in a match. I mean, ain't nothing I can do about it. I mean, it's just preposterous, just preposterous. So that they messed up there a bit at the end. And then Brother Ray and D-Von, I thought this was great until Thursday when they do an impromptu tables match, a six-man tables match with D-Von and Bully both in the match. And it ends when D-Von's sons, who Bully had spat on the week before, they jump the rail, they grab Bully's leg, D-Von puts Bully through a table. D-Von's team wins, D-Von beats Bubba, and D-Von's kids got revenge. So now, Bully is going to be Bully against D-Von and his sons in a handicap street fight, and Bully is supposed to be the heel Bully!
Well, let me ask you this question. How long would it have taken for TNA to turn the sons on D-Von anyway? Because wouldn't that be the only logical thing to do now? Well, I guess if you want to consider that logic.
I can't even conceive. I mean, Jesus. D-Von is supposed to be...
We saw with the Pope and his people, so they'll repeat that one again with this.
I know, but my God, D-Von is supposed to be the babyface. They make every babyface into a complete idiot. If his kids turn on him and side with Bully, D-Von just may as well just retire. I mean, what baffles me is... Why couldn't you have just done the street fight here, and this is where D-Von wins, and the kids get their revenge on Bully? I mean, isn't that the whole idea, that Bully is a bully, and then at the pay-per-view he gets his? He got his on TV. What am I paying for here?
Especially when they have in that match, or they have Pope running out of it, with Samoa Joe. Why didn't they just have that with Bubba and D-Von?
I don't know. I'm hoping that at the pay-per-view we'll have an answer as to what happened with the dogs and the kids. I'm still waiting.
What else can you say?
Obviously, Jeff Jarrett needs to win. If Jarrett does, if Angle just wins, then they've completely lost their minds. I put nothing past them.
No, see, if Angle wins, then you have the only thing you can do is a creepy, creepy storyline that's going to involve something with the kids saying something happened and it's going to get creepy. So the only other thing you can do is go the slapstick route because you know that's what it's going to be. But yeah, again, I don't know why they wanted to tell. It's either going to be very telegraphed or very just creepy.
You know, the Impact rating had been up of late because there were more viewers per home watching. And Dave attributed that to the Angle Jarrett storyline, like wives and you know, spouses and girlfriends watching because they're intrigued by that soap opera. But this week it was back to normal. So I don't know if last week all of the comedy, you know, they did those comedy vignettes, the tour of the house and the kids, you know, praying and that sort of thing. I wonder if that just turned folks off and they were like, well, this is stupid now. And that was the end of that. I guess that's up for debate. We have to head to a commercial. I'll get your thoughts on that when we come back. And more. We've got plenty of stuff coming up today, everybody, so stick around. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here previewing the TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view. And, Mike, before the break, we were discussing various things. Any thoughts on them? I forgot what they were.
Percy, Angle and Jericho?
Sure. I completely forgot what we were talking about before the break, actually. It's like it's like watching Impact when I talk about it now. I just forget everything.
I've loved Karen Angle and Jeff Jarrett and Angle and all this whole thing. And I don't know why they wanted to go with such a goofy type of thing that leads into this. Because obviously, you know, when it gets to Fayetteville, you know, it'll be Angle walking her down the aisle, and there will be some sort of wackiness that'll take place. And The match itself is going to be great because it's Angle and Jarrett, and it's probably going to be the best thing on the show. So I'm completely fine with it, even though, again, just why they decide to go in that direction, I guess we'll find out.
And the final match on the show is the Madison Rayne Mickie James match for the championship. Last Knockout Standing, they're calling it. At least that's the way that it was billed, although in their promo battle on Impact, neither of them bothered to mention it was a last woman standing match, which I asked this a while ago. Begs the question, why did they do a tape fist match a couple of weeks back with Mickie James and I believe Sarita if Madison Rayne's gimmick is that she's got a loaded fist or a loaded cast or a loaded whatever? I mean, shouldn't this be the taped fist match? Wouldn't that make sense? I'm thinking too much.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So I'll stop that, everybody. Let's think in an hour or two, and we're going to go into some news as well. We have plenty of it, and we're also going to be playing clips from a Chris Jericho interview that Dave Meltzer and I did a couple of days ago, talking about a bunch of very interesting subjects. He's got a new book coming out. In fact, it's in bookstores right now if you look around. It's not supposed to be until, I believe, Tuesday, but we've gotten reports from all over the country of people already getting the book. So we'll do that. We're going to go over some email questions as well. We have plenty of those. So it's going to be a fun show in hour two. Stick around. We'll be back after the top of the hour news break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. We spent much of the first hour talking about last night's Strikeforce event and, of course, the TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view, which is taking place immediately after this show goes off the air. You can get the results and the play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And then later on this evening, Dave Meltzer and I back for a brand new radio show exclusively for members of the website, WrestlingObserver.com, talking that show, previewing the next week, and more. And Mike, before we go on to the next topic here and get into some emails, just wanted to ask you very quickly something I thought about during the top of the hour break. Last night's show, the second round of the Fedor fight, two judges scored that 10-9. What do you think about that?
I think no matter what people say about half-point scoring or lots of other changes that they'd like to make to scoring in MMA, as long as you have judges like you have in boxing and MMA who are not drilled over and over again on what to look for in MMA, you're going to have scoring issues, period. It was a 10-8 round. It was a 10-8 round, period.
How do you beat a man so bad that he cannot answer the bell for the next round, and two judges think that he deserved 9 points? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, they felt he deserved 9 points for taking such a beating that between rounds the fight was stopped. So, yeah, I couldn't understand that. Neither could the people at the house with me because... you know, Mauro Ranallo had made a comment, something to the effect of, you know, could you argue a 10-8? And he said something like that. And my buddy on the couch next to me just said, could you argue it? Like, this was the most ridiculous statement he'd ever heard. Of course it was a 10-8, he thought. And then we discovered that two judges gave it a 10-9. So scoring sucks, everybody. So I'd throw that one out there. All right, we're going to head to the break. When we come back, email questions galore, and we've got a lot of news to get into as well. So lots of stuff coming up in the next hour, plus some Chris Jericho interview clips. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. More news up at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I alerted you during the break that I was going to have a question for you as we started out this segment, and you don't know what it is, so I'm keeping you on pins and needles here. Are you ready for this?
I believe so.
It's an easy one. Tell us about the 3D boxing experiment.
Well, yeah. And I guess I put this up in the forum, and I was you know, immediately told they've been doing this in England now for a while, and I'm sorry, I'm not in England. I did not know this. It's been hyped up. ESPN is doing, I guess, what would be then the first North American broadcast of a boxing event. It's going to take place on ESPN's Friday Night Fights from the illustrious Wacomico Youth and Civic Center, located in Delmarvelous, Salisbury, Maryland. And we'll feature a hometown hero, Fernando Guerrero.
Mike, did you say Delmarvelous?
It is. The Delmarvelous, Delmarva Peninsula.
Wow. All right, continue.
You know, it's not a mecca down here. You reach for what you can get. And it's just, he is the 160-pound fighter that is just the hometown hero, has been a hot prospect in boxing now for a while. At some point here, soon he's going to need to step up his game a little bit. Defeated Ishae Smith, formerly of The Contender, on Showbox. He's been a guy that Showbox and ESPN have loved to put on. So I don't know what the issue was around it, if it was just the right timing, or just they were able to do something with the building. But ESPN, at least, if you are one of the very few people that actually have 3D TV and 3D capabilities from your cable provider, you get to see Fernando Guerrero in the first North American boxing match in 3D this coming Friday night.
You know, there had been some talk that perhaps at some point soon WWE would experiment with a 3D WrestleMania, and they're not going to be doing that this year, but tomorrow on Raw, Vince McMahon is going to announce the larger-than-life persona who is going to host this year's WrestleMania. And, Mike, who do you think that person is going to be?
The Rock.
You think it's going to be The Rock?
Yeah.
I do as well.
Because the thing is, you know, I would need somebody to give me enough good reasons why it wouldn't be The Rock when you go, okay, Rock's talked about coming back. He's negotiated to appear on a Raw. I don't know if WWE is in the position of power right now to want to spend a whole lot of money to get somebody when, you know, even though they could use something to appear on the card that way, having The Rock on there as the quote-unquote host so he could be basically all over the show, and you have a reason for that happening on what is otherwise a, you know, it's a very average WrestleMania card as it stands right now. And, you know, he's got his movie coming out, I think, around that time. So it makes perfect sense all around. It's something, again, this isn't going to be the most epic of WrestleManias, but his appearance on there and him being just being The Rock on there and in the lead up to it is going to be good stuff.
There is strong talk right now that the main event of WrestleMania is going to be The Undertaker versus Triple H in a streak versus career match, and the special guest referee would be Shawn Michaels, who would likely be inducted into the Hall of Fame by Triple H the night before the event. Now, on paper, a really intriguing match. It's a match that has a stipulation that, you know, based on what happened with Shawn Michaels last year, I think people are going to buy a WrestleMania retirement stipulation match, or at least a full-time retirement from a full-time career, at least. Problem to me, and maybe I'm alone here, is that let's just say that Triple H returns tomorrow, which I don't know if that's going to happen, but let's just say he's going to return tomorrow. And Undertaker is going to return on 2/11/11 or 2/21/11, whatever the date is, February 21st, the Raw show. That leaves you with a very short window of time to somehow make people care about streak versus retirement, especially in the case of Triple H. Triple H has not been around, I think, since the Raw after WrestleMania. I forget when it was that Sheamus injured him, and then the idea was that Hunter would return for his revenge, and it kept getting put off and put off and put off, and now apparently he's not going to be coming back for his revenge. Maybe he'll just beat him in a quick TV match or something like that. But how do you get people to care about Triple H putting his career on the line when he's been gone for a full year, and he's going to be back for like 6 weeks before the pay-per-view where he puts his career on the line? I don't understand this one.
You're right. Over a longer period of time, this would have been better. You know, I don't know when they came up with this plan, because realistically, I mean, it's a great one. When you go, you're running out of options for The Undertaker, and you're running out of options for, you know, people believing how the streak could end and everything. And you had one where, you know, the average fan may know Triple H is involved in WWE, but, you know, we've heard rumblings that he's going to be far more involved this year. I don't think the average person would necessarily know that. So building something like this up, and obviously you have him inducting Shawn Michaels the night before, and them, you know, it's a good scenario because it's like, okay, they may screw the Undertaker out of his streak, and Triple H is a real star, and this is, you know, that I think the average fan would get into it and believe it, and over time it would have been better, but you just have to hope that they're pros, and it lights itself off immediately right off the bat, and it explodes right off the bat, and, you know, I guess if the Undertaker, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels can't do it, then, you know, it's a bad sign that no one can. But that's, again, they're not, obviously, yeah, they're not giving themselves a lot of time. And unfortunately, they're not going to do it enough justice, I think, if that's the direction they go, and, you know, as far as history looking back on it. Because it's something, if they would have started this up a little bit sooner, that would have been pretty cool.
I mean, even, like, when you look at Shawn Michaels Undertaker, I mean, it was a great storyline because Undertaker beat him once, and Shawn demanded a rematch, and Undertaker wouldn't give it to him. And Shawn was fighting so hard, he tried to win the Rumble to get it. He was trying so hard to get this second shot, and it wouldn't happen. And finally, you know, in the end, the only way to get it was he ultimately had to put his career on the line to get what he wanted so badly. And with Triple H, how do you script the motivation for Triple H putting his career on the line against Undertaker in 6 weeks? I mean, what is so important to Triple H that he has got to have this match with The Undertaker with his career on the line? I don't know how you can even do it. I mean, the only thing, I mean, you would have to do, to me, the reverse of what you did last year, but it would require Hunter beats Undertaker this year and ends a streak, which I cannot even fathom them doing. Actually, I can fathom it, but I don't think they're going to do that. And then Undertaker plays the role of, I cannot believe you under the streak. I need a rematch, blah, blah, blah. Hunter won't give it to him as a heel. Finally, you know, something happens, and I don't know. It wouldn't even work that way, because why would Hunter put his career on the line? So I don't really know. I mean, just, you know, I'm trying to think of things off the top of my head here, and I can't think of anything to make this really feel memorable, especially with 6 weeks.
Maybe it's just he comes back and his first promo is, you know, my career is going to blossom in Hollywood because of the chaperone, and I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, I guess we'll find out if they do it and if they do that stipulation. I mean, that's,
you know, the other thing with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker too, in the two Royal Rumbles prior to all of this stuff happening, they did tease Shawn knocking The Undertaker out of it. Actually, it was going on. You know, that thing was lingering for a long time, and they did a great job with that one.
Yeah, there were plenty of storylines to tie together to make that one work, and I don't see any of those here, really, except, you know, is Hunter going to go, you beat me X number of years ago, and it was like WrestleMania X8 or something like that, you beat me at WrestleMania, and I'm so determined to end your streak, I'm going to put my career on the line in 6 weeks for...
Well, and you know, you figure Triple H is going to come back at some point down the line, too. I can't see him just retiring for good and just being the office dude. You know, that's not going to happen. It just, it'll be interesting to see when he comes back, when you go out with what I would figure would be a whimper. In a lot of ways, because of the lead-up, if it doesn't go, you know, perfect, and everybody gets jacked up and supports it, then your comeback, when you do come back, isn't going to be, I don't think, as strong necessarily.
Well, we'll see what they end up doing, but the rest of the show, I mean, they've got no dream match announced right now. Well, they got really nothing announced right now, except Alberto Del Rio is going, so... We're going to know a heck of a lot more after next week's Elimination Chamber show. We can talk about that a little bit later on in this program. But when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about UFC. Their Toronto ticket sales, they have broken records. This is the biggest UFC event of all time by a wide margin. We're going to talk about that, the possibility of GSP, Anderson Silva, and more. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And we didn't get a chance to talk about UFC 126 since we didn't have a show last week, but the big news on the show, well, there's actually a lot of news, both on the show and at the press conference. Vitor Belfort knocked out with a front kick in the fight with Anderson Silva. Never thought I'd see that, but I did. So, way to go, karate. We had the Bones Jones destruction of Ryan Bader, and the announcement afterwards that Rashad Evans is injured, and as a result, Shogun Hua in Newark in just a few weeks is going to be facing Bones for the 205-pound title. And there are a lot of questions that will be coming out of that fight as to the future of Rashad Evans. Will he move up? Will he move down? What will he do? We shall find out soon. But at the press conference afterwards, some of the biggest news of the weekend, it was actually announced in a press conference a couple days before the event as well, if George St. Pierre beats Jake Shields in Toronto, then it is going to be at some point, probably this year, George St. Pierre versus Anderson Silva at 185 pounds. And Mike, what are your thoughts on that revelation?
My thoughts on it tie in a little bit with the sales of George St. Pierre tickets for Toronto, that Jerry Jones in Dallas, Texas, are going to be very happy to host Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre because they can. I think, you know, if GSP is going to move to 185 and do it permanently, yes. If it's just going to be champion versus champion, no. But if he is going to move and everything looks like he has been, and you've talked about him putting on muscle, you know, over time, and he's been very smart about it, and it makes complete sense. You know, why not? Why do you have him? Obviously, you're not going to have him fight, you know, some other guy at 185. There's no reason to have him fight Anderson Silva right off the bat, and there you go.
Toronto, they were putting 40,000 tickets on sale, and the idea was that 10,000 tickets, they said, would be priced under $100. Which meant that 30,000 tickets would be priced above $100. And my thought was, all right, if I want to sell out this building or sell out your 40,000 seats, then you need to put 30,000 tickets on sale at $100 or less, and you put 10,000 tickets on sale above $100. I thought this was a foolish idea on the part of UFC. I was wrong. They sold those tickets out in a heartbeat. And they ended up having to put another 15,000 tickets or so on sale. And those were gone pretty much immediately. They have sold out 55,000 seats for the Rogers Center. The gate is going to be nearly $11 million. Their previous high was right around 5.5, maybe $6 million, I believe. I don't have the exact number in front of me. But they've nearly doubled their record with this show. And it's quite frankly, amazing. And I guess we shall see. The big question is, how many tickets were bought by the public? How many tickets were bought by scalpers? Will scalpers, if they bought the majority of the tickets, be able to unload them? Still some questions here, but, I mean, you know, there are very few things to say that can even remotely be construed as negative here. I mean, this is incredible business. And will it be as good the second time around? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. They're bringing in bleachers. They're putting up big screens. They're going out of their way to try to make this a fun fan experience. The big question, I think, is the show itself. Whether the show itself will be a great fan experience. The Jose Aldo-Mark Hominick fight should actually be very exciting. But, I mean, the main event of GSP and Jake Shields, thank God it's GSP, because if not, you know, if it were anyone other than GSP likely having the same fight with Jake Shields, unless it's just a quick knockout victory, I mean, this could be a boring five-round snooze fest here.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, the GSP is one of the reasons there's 55,000 tickets sold for this thing, and, you know, Dana White has always said how much he loves Toronto, and, you know, if I'm sitting in Albany and I'm even remotely a fan of getting MMA passed in New York, I'd look over the border and then just start going nuts again because, you know, I didn't dislike the ticket packages the way they had them as much as you, but it was cringeworthy when you thought about just, you know, how much you just thinking about the gate that they were going to do was the thing that stopped me of like, I don't think they can actually do that much, and I was wrong. They're actually doing that much. Yeah, Lesnar and Mir and Liddell and Ortiz, they were both around $5.5 million, and this thing might do 11. That's ridiculous. That's just absolutely incredible.
Let's do some of the email questions here, and we'll do some news and some of the Jericho interview here after a while. Several journalists have noted that Forrest Griffin's demeanor and reputation behind the scenes is nothing like his fan-friendly persona in front of the camera. Could you elaborate? I don't know what else there is to say, really. He can be a real jerk. He has good days and his bad days, but sometimes he does not want to talk to anybody, and he's sarcastic, and he acts like a jerk, and he says things that people laugh at, but he's being serious. And, you know, there was, I can't remember what the clip was. There was a clip of him at a book signing on one of the Countdown specials, and he said something really mean to one of the people there, and everybody went, ha, 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 ha. And I just sat there and thought, no, he's being serious. So, yeah, that's, I don't know really what else there is to say there. Just not a friendly guy. Let's see. Is there a TNA pay-per-view tonight? This person asked. In all seriousness, he says, I love how Eric Bischoff attributed the recent ratings success to making storylines more serious, but the main programs tonight involve a stipulation where the custody of kids will be determined by a grappling battle. And when is Desmond Wolfe coming back? I don't know. I've given up hope on trying to figure out the Desmond Wolfe thing. You know, I heard a lot of things. Undisclosed injury, you know, political issues with the company. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know when he's going to be back or if he's ever going to be back. And, you know, I've talked to friends of his and they don't know either. He's not telling anybody. So I don't know what the deal is with Desmond Wolfe. So there you go. I just wanted to know if the original plan was for Jericho to win the title in 2001 when he beat Rock and Austin. If not, who else was going to win the title? Jericho being on the show this week got me thinking again about that period in wrestling. Thanks. I'm sure he has a lot more in his book. As far as I know, that was the plan. I never heard otherwise. Mike, did you hear anything?
No, I always thought it was going to be Jericho.
Yeah. So, there you go. Brian and Mike, do you think the announcement for WrestleMania in Miami and not Toronto has to do with UFC's monster upcoming gate in Toronto? I'm thinking that it had to factor in their decision, as the two big events would definitely have media comparisons, and the gate difference would have had UFC crushing WrestleMania, and WWE didn't want to look second to UFC in the market. Curious on your thoughts. I don't think so. I mean, they, you know, obviously these WrestleMania deals, they're not done overnight. You know, they've got a lot of different cities bidding. I think that the WrestleMania announcement was known before the UFC ticket sale deal was known. And, I mean, quite frankly, if I were WWE and I heard UFC is going to be putting on tickets on sale for the Rogers Center and 30,000 tickets are going to be priced above $100, I would think there's no way they're selling 40,000 seats. So what's the big deal? And it doesn't even matter anyway, because 55,000 seats, you know, WWE can go into a building. And in fact, I think WWE could have done WrestleMania in the Rogers Center with super cheap tickets and done more than 55,000 fans. They wouldn't have done a bigger gate. They wouldn't have done even close, but they could brag that we outdrew UFC in Toronto. So I don't think one had anything to do with the other. Maybe it did. I mean, it's possible, but I think the timing was such that I find that a little bit hard to believe.
Especially in 1990, they did, what, 67,000? You got the Exhibition Stadium show, which I think was, you know, it's going to be bigger than this UFC. Now, obviously, UFC is taking a different tact in as far as the fan experience and the screens and all that sort of stuff, where it's not exactly the same thing as far as packing him into the building. So that's the reason. Yeah, I mean, they could get whatever Rogers actually holds, 70,000. They could get 70,000 people in there and do it just like WrestleMania 6. But with that said, they have different eyes on it. But I don't think it really matters at all. It's just Miami's a good location for him. I'm just wondering when Vancouver is actually going to be an option for him.
Eric here says, supposedly when Jeff Jarrett was leaving the WWE following his feud with China, he was not under contract the day of his last pay-per-view match. Story I heard was he demanded a large payment from Vince to do the match. Do you know if this is true? Do you know more of the backstory regarding this? Was this considered shrewd business dealings by Jarrett, or did he catch a lot of heat in the industry by trying to blackmail Vince? The reason there is a TNA is because of this story. He was not under contract. His contract expired, I believe, like the day before, and he demanded, I believe, close to $200,000 to do the job and lose the title to China. And once he did that, Vince blackballed him from the company. And when WCW died, Jeff Jarrett was one of the guys that Vince fired, so to speak, on the air. And, you know, he was never, ever, ever, ever going to use Jeff Jarrett again because of this. And with nowhere else to go with WCW dead, Jeff talked his father into this TNA deal, and the rest is history. So, yes, that is a true story. And, you know, depending on how you look at it, either a good or a bad call by Jeff Jarrett.
Well, a lot of people would say, well, you know, he was just, you know, getting what was his up front as far as what pay-per-view money he would be owed and whatever else. And, you know, that was a real old-school way to do it. It's not like he wouldn't have got his money. You know, it wasn't his, you know, fault that Jim Ross didn't get him locked up. So it was, you know, it just really, you know, not exactly the best move. But then again, I think going over to WCW, I don't think anyone had a clue at that time that there wouldn't be a WCW again and you might have to have a job.
Any chance of Fedor moving to the U.S. and hooking up with an established fight team in an attempt to reinvigorate his career? I don't think so.
No.
Fedor is just, he's a guy who loves to train where he trains. He loves his Orthodox music, his Russian Orthodox music, as he noted yesterday, which, what an interview that was. It was funny, because like the night before, his Twitter had gone up. And that was one of his tweets, was that he loved his Russian Orthodox music. And then the very next day, he did a promo, and they asked him about that. So I guess they must have read his Twitter. But I listened to him calmly stating that he loved listening to Russian Orthodox music with no rhythm, I believe, or no beat. I can't remember the exact term that he used. But I was like, you could not create a character like this man.
Maybe that's why he likes the flashy jackets and sweaters.
Could be.
That's how he expresses himself.
Well, those sweaters, they tell a story, let me tell you. I don't think that's happening. I don't see him coming to the U.S. We can get Mike's thoughts after the break, but I think he pretty much agrees as well. So, anyway, we'll be back in just a moment playing some clips of a Chris Jericho interview as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We always plug the website, WrestlingObserver.com, where you can always go to hear more. If you only hear this show one time per week, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. We do daily shows. In fact, a couple days ago, I did 3 shows in one day. I mean, we do easily 15 to 20 radio shows every week. If you've got a long commute, if you go to the gym, if you want stuff to listen to, you love pro wrestling and MMA audio, this site is the site for you. Not only do we do daily shows, sometimes many times per day, but our full archive is available to subscribers. It's only $10.99 every month. And if you sign up, the archives date back to 2005. So basically, if you sign up today, you have essentially signed up for every day of every year for the past 6 years, because we've got interviews with the biggest stars in wrestling. Bruno Sammartino, Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Brian Danielson, the list goes on and on. They're all available in our archives right now. There are no extra fees once you sign up. You just sign up. You get all the new stuff. You get all the old stuff immediately. And we're going to give you a teaser of that right now. It's an interview that Dave Meltzer and I did a couple of days ago with Chris Jericho, talking his new book and a number of different subjects as well. So we'll play about 6 or 7 minutes of this. And of course, if you sign up, you can get the full interview as well. And pretty much every other interview we've ever done. And there are a lot of them. So let's go to the Chris Jericho interview here. This is from WrestlingObserver.com. Myself and Dave Meltzer interviewing Y2J.
Now, when I thought that maybe the best writing of the whole book was when you were writing about your mother. You know, I just thought that was it was riveting. It was tremendous. As far as the writing and with Chris Benoit, when you see. I don't know how much you've read. I mean, like, there's the stuff about Chris Benoit that's kind of weird to me. Is I thought you really handled it well. Because you knew him better than most. And I mean, I never knew the story about, you know, of all the people that you sent wedding invitations when you got married, Chris Benoit never RSVP'd, and it's just that was something. And I don't know what that means as far as, like, the big picture or anything like that. Yet at the same time, and one of the things about Chris that in hindsight bothers me is people who have taken, like, one of two tacks about him. One is that he was this, you know, great, great, wonderful guy. And he was a fantastic wrestler, one of the best of all time, of course. But the other one is that he was this horrible person throughout his entire life. And, you know, and this was a culmination of being this horrible person that went unchecked. And I know you know him better than that. And even, you know, didn't know him well, but I knew him enough. It bothers me because you kind of have to accept that, you know, he had his flaws. But I just remember him as actually being one of the better guys in the business that I ever dealt with.
Well, I think I've actually gotten some good feedback from that, where actually there was one review that I read, I can't remember where it was from, that said that the chapter almost, or the book almost humanizes Benoit again, because it makes you remember that the guy was a human being and was a great guy and was very much respected in so many ways. You know, one of the most respected guys by everybody, from top talent to office to up-and-coming guys, because he was the real deal. I remember Ray Traylor said once, he's a man's man. What you see is what you get with Chris. And that's true, except for there was something dark underneath him that was lurking underneath that you never really saw. But, I mean, did you ever guess that he could do something like that? Well, of course not. But, I mean, there's a million things I've done in my career that if I ever did something like that, you would say, well, geez, there's the Jericho, you know, there's the evil Jericho coming out. All of us have a dark side. There's no doubt about it. All of us have issues. All of us have demons. All of us have done things that are completely and utterly psycho, especially when you've been in the wrestling business for 20 years or whatever Chris was, myself too. You can't be on the road that long and gone through what we've gone through and not be a little bit insane or completely insane. It's just that whatever it was that was inside of Chris culminated into this, you know, atrocity that we'll never know exactly the reason why it happened. So Chris was not an evil guy his whole life. Everybody loved Benoit, but there's also people like myself or Regal or Dave Penzer that really knew him really, really well, Dean, that will tell you, you know, when you look back on it, there was a lot of signs. But there's a lot of signs for all of us. We just don't ever do anything about it. You know what I mean? So I think the book will help people to remember the good side of Benoit and not just always dwell on the last couple of days of his life. But like I said in my book, too, I'm not pulling any punches. I despise that what he did. I despise the man for that, the man that was around the last 2 days and did all that stuff. You know, you have kids, Dave. I don't know if you do, Brian, but I have kids. I can't imagine. I can't even... in the outer recesses of my mind, even imagine for a second, you know, I mean, you know, the whole thing with Nancy, I mean, everybody's been so furious at the significant other, you can see how an accident would happen. But something with your child, I can't envision it. I just can't even think about it. And I have no use for a human being like that. And I think one of my favorite paragraphs in the book is at the very end when I say that, you know, Chris and Eddie were so... at the end of the Benoit chapter, Chris and Eddie were so similar in their entire lives and so opposite in their deaths. And it's like both of them were just critically acclaimed, two of the greatest of all time, two of the most well-loved guys in the business. And Eddie will always be remembered as a hero, and Benoit will always be remembered as a villain, hated coward, who you can't even say his name.
You know, one thing when you bring up those two names, and I actually wanted to ask you about this, because in the book, in your book, and it's I think that this is different from... not every wrestling book, but a lot of the wrestling books, is when you have a bad match or a bad performance or just something that you're not happy with, I mean, you're pretty hard on yourself, and you're not, like, sugarcoating it. It's like, you know, okay, you know, the Jericho curse, or, you know, this match sucked and everything. And I don't remember too many of your matches, you know, sucking. I mean, like, you know, obviously there's some better than others, but when I'm reading it, it reminded me of something, and it was a match that I saw in Tokyo in the 90s, and it was Benoit and Guerrero were on opposite sides, and I think Shinjiro Otani was one of the guys, and I don't remember who the fourth guy was. It might have been Liger or Koji Kanemoto, and it was this absolutely fantastic match. I mean, just unbelievable. This was, you know, those guys in their prime, Japanese, the fans were going crazy for them. You know, mid-card match more than any other match on the show by leaps and bounds, and we went out to dinner, and afterwards, you know, they were like, all they could do is talk about what was wrong with the match. And I'm thinking, this is probably one of the two or three best matches I've seen all year, and one of probably the 10 best matches I've ever seen live in my life. And they're sitting there, you know, and I'm going, this match is fantastic. You really thought so? And it's like, I've been around guys who've had good matches before, and I never was around guys who had a match that good who were sitting there picking it apart and like not wanting to accept that it was good and that the crowd went crazy. And I just thought that was just very interesting. You know, I mean, other guys, when they have good matches, it's like, you know, I mean, they'll have a good match and they'll want you to say it's the greatest match of all time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things about being, and I'm not, you know, I know this is going to come out in print and make me look bad, but one thing is about being really good at something, even almost a genius in a lot of ways. I think that the best guys in this business are geniuses when it comes, I mean, this is art. You know, wrestling is art. And I think when you're a genius or have unbelievable a talent to do something, that you always go through that. I bet you, you could go see Paul McCartney now, or somebody that's been doing this for 40, 50 years, and go, boy, I was terrible tonight, and the whole crowd was going bananas. That's one thing I've definitely learned over the last couple of years, is that, you know, the reaction of the crowd is more important. But back in those days, I didn't have a lot of confidence in what I was doing in the WWE. I went through a lot of trials by fire when I first got in. There's a lot of targets on my back, and you can see all that when I write about it. You know, there was a real witch hunt out for Jericho, just because I had the misfortune of coming from WCW, but I didn't really know how to deal with it. I was too naive to realize that this whole political game was going down. And when I found out it was, I lost my confidence. And when you lose your confidence in this business, it's a killer. When you have your confidence, it's great. And you can go up there and have a five-star match with you know, a popcorn vendor in the front row who's never worked before. That's the beauty of it. But when you have no confidence, I mean, I tell a story about Flair in 2002 about how they wouldn't even let him swing a chair. Like, they didn't think he could do anything. And it's because Flair didn't think he could do anything. He had no confidence. I had to, like, verbally slap him in the face and say, pull up your socks, man. You're Rick frickin' Flair. Get out there and do what you can do. And he finally got back to business again. But, you know, when you lose that belief in yourself, it's a terrible thing. So I don't have a problem saying, you know, at this point, at this time, I did not like it. And I think it was terrible, and I think it could have been better. And I think that's the reason why the book works and why the first book was so well-received and why this one has been so far, too, is because I have no problem calling myself onto the carpet for anything, whether it's matches, whether it's some of the concerts I've had with Fozzie, some of the acting performances I've had, some of the things I've done as a human being. You know, I don't have any problem saying this was bad, because there's nobody on this planet who can say that everything they ever did was perfect. And you read books like that where they do, and it's not worth reading. So, you know, I don't mind talking about it that way, but I've found that, I mean, Shawn Michaels, to this day, will still go, did you like it? Was it good? I mean, Shawn Michaels, you know, to me, the best ever, still sometimes needs to know if it was good. I went and saw Metallica, and I was standing by the side of the stage, and Lars Ulrich came off and asked me, how was the concert, man? Was it good? Did it go good? It's like there's 15,000 people going crazy. You know, that's just how people get when you get to a certain level, maybe.
So very good interview there with Jericho, very eye-opening. And any thoughts on that, Mike? And have you read his first book?
Yeah, I have read his first book, and that was fantastic. And you know, obviously the second book sounds like it as well, because of how frank and open he is about, you know, himself and his career and things that he's done. You know, it was always amusing every time you hear again, you know, no matter how long someone's been doing something and no matter how good that they are, that they still, even they, you know, will ask the question, like Shawn Michaels did, hey, you know, it was good, right? You know, it's always kind of a fun thing to hear when, you know, those guys are still honestly asking themselves that, and it's still really cool, and I can't wait to read the book, because, you know, he really goes into his issues with politics and everything else, and obviously him and Chris Benoit, too. I mean, I was one of those people in the camp that, you know, take Benoit back out of the Hall of Fame because he went crazy, you know, that night, and that's, you know, Jericho again, you know, it seems to humanize Benoit a little bit more again, which, you know, there was one time where Chris Benoit wasn't a monster, and people are going to always forget about that now because of what happened. And, you know, Jericho's relationship with him, it's just going to be probably a pretty amazing read.
Any thoughts on the Royal Rumble? We didn't have a chance to talk about that a couple of weeks ago.
No, you know, he had actually talked me out of my original thought about Alberto Del Rio with your possibilities of what could happen with Dolph Ziggler.
I thought about it a little too much, apparently.
Yes, but, well, Alberto wins, and I'm, you know, completely happy with that. You know, in another alternate universe, it'd be something flashy where the mainstream, there would be a match on there, McMahon-Trump-like or something like that, that would give some more flash to it, because I think he could use it. But still, I'm happy with Alberto Del Rio, and hopefully they keep getting him over and the arm breaker over, and hitting the match with Edge. Hopefully he's going to be really good.
You know, I've been very critical of Miz as champion and the booking of him of late, because he never beats anybody. He's the champion. He can barely beat Jerry Lawler. He has to have help from Michael Cole. And sometimes people just get on me and say, Brian, the heels never win clean. The heel champions, blah, 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 blah. And granted, he's not the champion yet, but I watched SmackDown this week, and they did Alberto Del Rio and Kofi Kingston. And Kofi is the Intercontinental Champion. And in a non-title match, Alberto not only beat him, but he beat him clean in the middle of the ring with his arm breaker submission when Kofi tapped out. And I just watched that, and I thought, it's just amazing to watch the booking of Alberto Del Rio versus the booking of Miz. And as much as they love Miz as a talker, I mean, I look 6 months down the road and I see Alberto Del Rio as champion or a full-time main eventer and Miz back in the upper mid-card again, because I just, he's booked in such a fashion that I cannot believe that they really have any confidence in him.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Where has this big clean win's been? They have not been there, and Alberto Del Rio is, yeah, I think he's gonna be far shinier.
We're going to head to a break. When we get back in just a moment, we'll do a couple of final emails and wrap up the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A couple of emails here before we wrap it up on the subject of Triple H versus Undertaker. This person says, what are your thoughts on the idea? I think the 2/21/11 will not be the Undertaker's return. He will make his return at Elimination Chamber, costing Wade his opportunity. It will be the supposed unveiling of Sting, who will come to the ring in full face paint, outfit, and bat. He will proceed to attack Undertaker, reveal himself to be Triple H, hidden under Sting's disguise. This mockery tease could lead to Sting's debut being at WrestleMania to help the Undertaker get the win at get win number 19. What are your thoughts on that that angle right there?
That would be interesting, although I could see that leading into a Undertaker and Sting against Triple H and somebody else match, which, you know, that could be a way to get the streak going on for another year, and the Undertaker, who's banged up anyway, doesn't have to take too much damage, and then later on down the line it could lead to a well-built career versus streak, you know, or career versus Undertaker match if you wanted Triple H to go out this year. So I don't know, it could be something different.
I just don't like the idea of Sting debuting after WrestleMania and having a run. I think with Sting, you need to build to a WrestleMania match, and that's the end. You know, a six-week
yeah.
run, you know, maybe even only one appearance to build up the match. You know, do one promo. I'm going to be there on such and such a date. It's you and me, Undertaker. You don't need a whole bunch of storylines or wackiness. Just get him out there for his match and do the match, and it's over. That's the way I think it should be done.
And you know what, with Sting too, to me they got to do it this year, because I know he'll still be a legendary figure, but I don't know how much more steam this is going to continue to have as the years go on.
Well, it would be a big one for 20-0.
That is true. That's true.
We got to wrap it up today, everybody. We are completely out of time. The TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view takes place immediately after the show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer is up at WrestlingObserver.com right now. He'll be doing live running play-by-play on the front page. Check it out. Later on tonight, the two of us will be up with a special post-pay-per-view edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be back here next week with a new live show. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.